want to invite you guys to turn to Matthew chapter 17, if you would, if you have a Bible, or if you have a smart device and you have the YouVersion Bible app. I want to invite you to open that up. If you go to your drop-down menu, you can go to the little live thing, and you can find our outline there. I want to invite you to do that. I forgot to ask John a question. John, did you get that video put in? Okay, awesome. Very cool. I'm sorry. While you guys are turning there, I want to invite you guys to turn to the screen and check out, I found the perfect gym for a lot of us. Check this out.
Introducing the first state-of-the-art fitness facility designed with the millennial in mind. With over 20,000 square feet fully equipped with hundreds of machines and high-speed broadband internet. Dozens of benches where you can comfortably check your Twitter feed or browse Netflix to find the perfect movie to watch TV to. And a wide selection of Bluetooth-enabled cardio machines fitted to support your tablets. We've got wall-to-wall mirrors so you can snap the best selfie. And we're staffed with accredited personal trainers who know how to get the best shot of the best you. Our tanning booths and hydro massage beds are fully equipped to support USB 3.0. We've got flat screen TVs, hundreds of charging stations, a barista, Froyo, and an Apple Genius bar. There's nowhere more exciting to stare at your phone than hashtag at the gym. Come for the workout, stay for the Wi-Fi.
That's right. All right. Well, many of us, like those gym members, have kind of forgotten what the church is about. We've kind of forgotten what we're here to do. I always have a question. Are these people ready for the day of trial? Are these people that are working out in this gym, are they ready to run the Bluegrass 10,000? Are they ready to step on the field of competition? Are they ready? When the day of trial comes, will they be ready? The answer is no. Well, guys, like them, they've forgotten the purpose of the gym. I mean, they go to the gym not to work out, not to exercise their body, which is the purpose of the gym. They're there to take selfies and check their devices. Now, why would you go to a gym and take selfies? That's kind of like going to a national prayer breakfast and not praying and making a speech instead. But it's a good thing that doesn't happen anymore. That's good. But guys, just like our folks in Washington, they've forgotten the purpose of a prayer breakfast is to pray. The purpose of a gym membership is to work out. The purpose of the church is what? We've been given a commission to go into all the world and make disciples, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded. So just like the people in the gym, are we ready for that task? Are we ready? Are we as people truly trained and ready to accomplish that task? Now, guys, Thursday morning, I talked with a wonderful lady, beautiful lady, who called about our church. And after talking with her for a little bit, found out that she was widowed and that just the night before, her daughter had overdosed on heroin in front of her own children. Heard the news story about the Christian bakers in Oregon who lost the lawsuit with the baking the cake. And they have been receiving death threats for not baking a cake for this same-sex couple. Their children have been getting death threats. They have closed down their bakery. They're operating out of their home. There's still the amount of vitriol online about them is unbelievable. ISIS burned a Jordanian pilot alive this week. And the UN reports that they have been raping girls and crucifying boys by the thousands. This is the world that Jesus says to go into and make disciples. Are we ready? Well, unfortunately, the church looks a lot more like that gym than a training ground, doesn't it? Well, guys, are we prepared for the challenge? Are we people who show up to the gym, wind up taking selfies and checking social media instead of really accomplishing what we're supposed to do? Well, Matthew chapter 17, Jesus gives us a huge picture of the Christian life and how God uses that to prepare us for this. There's a mountaintop experience at the beginning, and then there's a valley experience at the end. One moment the disciples are on top of the world, And the next moment, they're frustrated and powerless. One moment, they're all was right with the world. And then the next moment, they're confronted with pain and suffering. The one moment, they were certain they were in the presence of God. And next moment, when they were called out for their lack of faith, this is the Christian life. Anybody who's telling you something different is selling you something. All right? The Christian life is a mixture of highs and lows, probably more lows than highs. If you look at the history of this church, that's definitely true. And God uses both of them equally. He uses both highs and lows to prepare us to take his gospel to the nations. All right? So here's the main idea. I want you guys to write this down. If you don't hear anything else, I want you to get this. This is the main idea. Write this down. You can tweet it out, whatever. We are encouraged in the good times, but we grow in the bad times. Both are essential to the Christian life. We're encouraged in the good times, but we grow in the bad times. If you guys will turn to Matthew 17, verse 1 through 9. It says this: after 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John, the brother of James, and led them up a high mountain by themselves. There he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became white as the light. Just then there appeared before them Moses and Elijah talking with Jesus. Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you wish, I will put up 3 shelters, one for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah." While he was still speaking, a bright cloud covered them, and the voice from the cloud said, "This is my son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." When the disciples heard this, they fell face down to the ground, terrified. But Jesus came and touched them. "Get up," he said. "Don't be afraid." When they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus instructed them, "Don't tell anyone what you've seen until the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." Okay, this is what is known as a mountaintop experience. I kind of like today. Today is a mountaintop experience for this church. I mean, this is a big deal, and I'm so glad that you guys are all here. This is a great Sunday, and I'm so glad you're here. But here, guys, 3 things happen on mountaintop experiences that God uses. Number one is that we see Jesus for who he truly is. Okay? The disciples had been walking around with Jesus for several years, and they saw a guy that looked a lot like you and me, okay? The human side. Well, up on top, all the humanity is stripped away, and they see Jesus as the Son of God, radiant. I mean, if you'd have been there, you'd have fallen face down. And I can remember reading this story and being a little cynical. Did this really happen? I mean, guy goes up on top of a mountain, and all of a sudden he becomes gleaming white. And I mean, did that really happen? Well, here's my case. If Jesus is God, wouldn't you expect that kind of stuff from him? I mean, if Jesus truly is the Son of God, would this be out of character for him? No, it wouldn't. This would actually be what you would expect from Jesus. But we go on here. Guys, God gives us times of clarity where we see him clearly. I remember my sophomore year in college, at Center College. It was the worst year. It was horrible. I lived in the fraternity house. And I remember coming back. We had a weekend soccer trip where we'd played Trinity University in San Antonio. Been flying. We were our sleep schedule was all messed up. I was exhausted. Got back Sunday afternoon. And I walk into my room, and there's somebody sleeping in my bed. And she was not attractive. Okay? It was awful. Okay, that's the sophomore year. So I remember one night, it was a Friday night, we had a game the next day, I had to be up early, and there's a party going on downstairs, so I could hear the music, and I stayed up, and I stayed upstairs and I was reading my Bible, okay, I was, and I thought to myself, man, what a loser I am. I'm up here reading the Bible, and there's a party going on downstairs, and in one of those moments of clarity, it was, I don't know if I fell asleep or something, but God just put this huge vision in my mind, and all of a sudden, I wasn't in my room anymore. I was at this scene of this terrible shipwreck, kind of like the Titanic, and I was on a lifeboat, and I was going away from the ship, and the ship was sinking. It was going down, and the music from the deck was the same music from downstairs, and everybody on the ship, this was what I saw in my mind. Everyone on the ship was oblivious to the fact that the ship was sinking. And they were partying, they were drinking, they were hooking up, and all this kind of stuff as the thing was going down. And as I was paddling away in this lifeboat, I had this intense sense that I had just been rescued from a sinking ship, and the people were completely oblivious to it. And I don't know really what happened there. The people were oblivious to the fact that they would all be dead. And I had this huge emotional rush that Jesus had saved me. Saved me from what looked so attractive And he had saved me. And this fellowship, this intense closeness that I just can't explain, guys. It was a mountaintop experience. God approached me in a fraternity house on a Friday night, my sophomore year. And I knew without a doubt he's the Son of God. He was there with me. And I would imagine the feeling that I got, this overwhelming rush, is the same feeling that the disciples got when they saw Jesus transfigured. They saw him for who he truly was. I don't know if you've ever had that kind of experience before, but when they gaze unveiled into the very eyes of God himself, and you're like, no, wait a minute, Dave. Are you one of the people that says, that believes in emotional experiences that they're essential to the Christian life? Yes, I do. You're a smart guy. You know, you've got a college degree and a master's degree. And are you still saying that with all of that you still believe in emotional? Yes, I do. And this is why. I believe you can't experience the God of the universe and not be affected emotionally. As a matter of fact, if you can look into the eyes of Jesus, we're talking God here. We're talking the one who creates things out of nothing, the most glorious being in all the universe, the grand high, Alpha, the Omega. If you can look at him and not be moved emotionally, you're not intellectual, you're dead. And when God approaches us, he approaches all of us, our mind, our body, our emotions. And so, yes, I am someone that thinks that those experiences are important. Okay? I don't believe you can be completely normal and be in the presence of Jesus Christ. I don't believe you can. Guys, but so that happens. You see God for who he truly is in these mountaintop experiences. The second thing is that we experience true worship. True worship. Okay? Verse 6 tells us, when they heard the voice of God, they fell down terrified. That's a pretty good worship posture. It really is. Now remember, just last chapter, if you guys were here last week, we talked about how Jesus and Peter were talking, and Peter was telling Jesus what he could and couldn't do. You know, Jesus said, I'm going to go to Jerusalem, I'm going to die, I'm going to be crucified, put to death, I'm going to rise. And Peter says, no, you're never going to do this. Okay, just last chapter, he was telling God what to do. Now he's falling face down before God. Which is the more appropriate worship response? Well, this is God we're talking about here, people, the God of the universe. And how does Jesus respond when they fall down terrified? He touches them on the shoulder and says, get up, don't be afraid. Guys, we experience true worship, not this dead, boring, lifeless mantra that marks so many of our worship experiences. That's not what happens in the mountaintop. We experience true, authentic, yes, terrifying worship where God has to reach down to us and say, don't be afraid. Have you ever been in a church service where God has had to tell you not to be afraid? If not, I would say you're not experiencing true worship. I think if you truly experience true worship, you're going to be a little bit uneasy because you are encountering the God of the universe who holds life in his hand and who loves you beyond anything you could ever imagine. That happens on the mountaintop. Those things are great. The third thing that happens is that we're encouraged to persevere. Okay, mountaintop experiences encourage us to persevere. I just took 10 high schoolers to the Tennessee Christian Teen Convention a couple weeks ago. It was a mountaintop experience. You get 5,000 high schoolers there praising Jesus, and the sound and the roar of teenagers praising God was just really, really, really cool. And that was encouraging. As we were coming back, several of the teens said, it was just great to know I'm not alone. There are 5,000 other people there that feel exactly what I'm feeling, that are going through exactly what I'm going through. It was an encouragement. They were encouraged to persevere. And guys, today is a mountaintop experience for this church. It really is. I mean, the fact that we're here, a grand opening, the church is full. It's just amazing to see what is going on. So let this encourage you. When you have mountaintop experiences or things to go back and remember, they're called Ebenezer moments. I remember my baptism. Whenever I'm tempted to doubt or tempted and I'm struggling and everything, I go back to my baptism and said, that was real. And I am encouraged. That's a mountaintop experience. So guys, if you're ever doubting or discouraged or anything, remember this day. Remember the day we made our grand opening in the former Presbyterian church in Nicholsville, and be encouraged. That's what mountaintop experiences are. But here's the thing, guys. The problem with the mountaintop is that they're very short and rare. They don't last. And many of us think that life, especially our church life, especially our Christian life, should look like that all the time. That you should always feel intense closeness with God. You should always experience true worship. You should always be encouraged. Everything should be great. And when that doesn't happen, when the thing falls apart, we cut bait, we leave the faith, we find another church that will give us a mountaintop experience. And when that goes bad, we just go to another one. Guys, unfortunately, that's a toxic line of thinking. But Jesus brings them down from the mountain. I don't think they're up there very long. and immediately smacks him in the face with reality. Verse 14, follow along with me. When they came to the crowd, there's a crowd waiting for him. A man approached Jesus and knelt before him. Lord, have mercy on my son, he said. He has seizures and is suffering greatly. He often falls into the fire and into the water. I brought him to your disciples, but they could not heal him. Verse 17, O unbelieving and perverse generation, Jesus replied, how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy here to me. Jesus rebuked the demon, and it came out of the boy, and he was healed at that moment. Verse 19, then the disciples came to Jesus in private and asked, why couldn't we drive it out? He replied, because you have so little faith. Truly I tell you, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move from here to here, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you. Where is the faith developed? On the mountaintop? No, it's developed in the valley when things are not going great, when things are questioning. Guys, we said mountaintop experience were essential. Well, I'm telling you that valley experiences are essential. When you're not feeling close to God, when you're not experiencing true worship, when you're not encouraged, those are essential to the Christian life too, and this is why. Number one, valleys are where the greatest needs are. Why does God give mountaintop experiences? Why does God bring us together here for Sunday worship? Is it to feel good about ourselves, or is it to prepare us for the needs that exist outside these walls? That's why. Okay, big grand opening today, celebration, fun, excitement, then what? Guys, the second they came down from that mountain, they're confronted with a parent who is overwhelmed with the problem with their child. Do we have any people in our community who are concerned about their children? Do we? Small children being rebellious, maybe. Teenagers experiencing with dangerous stuff, disrespect and defiance. Adult children who've abandoned the faith and leading lives that are out of control. Yeah. I would say that sums up every person in here. If not every person in here, it sums up somebody we know and just about everybody who exists outside these walls. Guys, when we come down out of the mountain and we have experienced true worship, then God puts us in contact with people who need us. And that is why the mountain is there. Guys, I say one or more of these situations, like I said, applies to everyone in here. And does this church have any solution to this? Guys, the man in the story had a child that was possessed by a demon. Okay? So in other words, something was controlling him that made him do things he normally wouldn't do. Become someone that no one recognized. And do things he normally wouldn't do. Do we know anyone who's being controlled by something that makes them do things that they normally wouldn't do? Things that they know better than? And became people that no one recognizes? I think so. Probably the biggest issue facing this community is drug addiction. And guys, I want to tell you, if there's one thing that controls people, that turns them into people that no one recognizes and makes them do things they normally wouldn't do, it's drug addiction. I think every person here is probably affected by that. Does the church have anything to say to a community dealing with drug addiction? Or are we going to stay up on the mountain and try to feel good about ourselves all the time? Well, when Jesus puts us up on the mountain, brings us down, then he confronts us with people's needs. Okay? This church has a responsibility to do that. God is giving Catalyst Christian a mountaintop experience today, intense closeness with God, because he wants to introduce us to the pain and struggling of the folks out there. That's why. Okay? So we as a church, ready to roll up our sleeves and get our hands dirty where the real problems are? Jesus present in the mountaintop and in the valley. Jesus heals the boy. Okay? He heals the boy. And then the disciples said, why couldn't we drag it out? Why couldn't we drive it out? Jesus says, because you have such little faith. Okay? Well, guys, here are three things I found out about faith I want you to remember, because I want to be part of a church that is full of faith. Okay, number one, true faith is as wrought with failure as it is with success. Okay? True faith is wrought with as much failure as it is success. Okay? Charles Swindoll said this, Chuck Swindoll, there's not an achievement worth remembering that isn't stained with the blood of diligence and etched with the scars of disappointment. There's nothing that anybody's accomplished worth anything that has not caused pain and struggle and failure. And your faith is the same thing. Guys, I don't remember when I learned how to walk. I don't know about you guys. I don't remember, but I know I didn't get it right the first time. The fact that I'm walking shows I didn't give up. I don't remember when I learned how to write, but I know I didn't write well the first time. The fact that I can write means I kept at it. I don't know when I learned how to ride a bike. But I know I didn't get it right the first time. I don't remember when it was I learned how to tie a tie, but I know I didn't get that right the first time. I didn't get it right the first time when I learned to drive a stick shift. It was bad. But the fact that I can do it now shows I didn't give up. Guys, all the things that we're capable of doing, we didn't get right the first time, yet we stuck at it. You guys, that's the thing with faith. If you think that faith is going to be handed to you on a platter, you're sorely mistaken, okay? Think about it. All the things that you do well are the things you most likely failed at the first time. Faith is the same way. We fail at faith. We fall into temptation, and we sin, and we screw things up, sometimes royally. Well, guys, we pick ourselves back up, and we persevere. That is what the valley teaches us. That's the disciples experienced failure here. Right after the mountaintop experienced failure, and yet they didn't quit. Guys, it's in the valley that we're learning how to pick ourselves up, to persevere, to never quit. Disciples couldn't heal the boy. It's frustrating to them. They failed. They look back, look bad in front of the crowd, and guess what? That's us. It's not now, it's going to be. Somebody's going to do something in this church that's going to make us look bad. Me, probably. Well, guys, are we the type of people that have enough faith to persevere? Guys, faith is wrought with failure as much as success. So if you guys are struggling in your walk with Christ, you say, I'm barely even keeping my head above water, let alone spending any time with God, chill out. Chill out. You don't have to be great at this thing called faith. You just have to keep going. Your faith is going to be as wrought with success and failure. So chill out. Take it easy and keep going. Guys, second thing is that true faith is developed through suffering and questioning. Suffering and questioning. A lot of times Christians look at suffering as a bad thing. Questioning is a bad thing. Like we shouldn't be there. We shouldn't have these doubts. We shouldn't have failures. Guys, I'm telling you, that's the only way faith is developed. There's no easy way to faith. Charles Spurgeon, the great preacher, says that God never uses you powerfully until he hurts you deeply. And I have found that that is true. There is no one in the church or in the Christian life that has ever done anything significant with God without battle scars. Okay? If you go through the list of heroes of faith in the Bible, every one of them experienced terrible times, awful times, near to going through hell. And guys, that's the only way that they ever had the kind of faith that would allow them to be effective in this world. Guys, the story of this church is more marked by failure than success. I'll tell you that. I know because I've been here from the beginning. I've made most of the failures. Okay? There are times when everyone here felt like quitting, throwing in the towel. I can tell you, but the staff, when we were bivocational, every one of us had to have a job outside of this church to get it going. It was tough. Our family suffered. It was just a time of questioning. Is this thing ever going to work? I can tell you that. Being a church planner, like I said, takes a toll on the family. Investing in people. You invest in all these people, and then they just leave, and they criticize you on the way out. Makes you want to throw in the towel. There's a month when it was time to do payroll and all we had was $90 in the checking account. I remember that. That was November 2009. And we had mortgages due the next day. I had no idea how we were going to pay them. Guys, I'm telling you that true faith is developed through suffering and questioning. And I'm telling you, through all of those things, we are still here. So what's your excuse? All we have to do is look at the times of trial and suffering and keep going. Keep going. That's what I want to tell you. Michael Jordan said that I don't practice until I get things right. I practice till I can't get it wrong. And that is such a huge application for our faith too. We don't practice till we get it right. We practice till we can't get it wrong. We just keep going. That's what the valley teaches us. And the third thing we learn in the valley is this. This is the good news. The true faith leads to a powerful life. What is it that Jesus says? He says, if you have faith the size of a mustard seed, the kind of faith that persevered through tough times, that persevered through questioning, persevered through when you thought your life was falling apart, if you have the faith the size of mustard seed, you'll be able to tell this mountain to move over there. That's the kind of power that you're going to have. Jesus says, if you have faith the size of a mustard seed, you have a power that defies the imagination. I want to tell you, one of my favorite stories, if you've been a part of Catalyst for a while, you've heard it, and you're going to hear it again. One of my favorite stories about faith is about a tightrope walker named Blondin. He stretched a tightrope across Niagara Falls, and he walked. There's a crowd of 10,000 on either side. They watched him walk from one side, from the Canadian side, to the American side. And when he jumped down, everybody just went nuts, just absolutely nuts. And he on the ego trip, he raised his hands above his head. He goes, "I am Blondin." And everybody just cheered. And he goes, "Do you believe in me?" And everybody shouted in the crowd, "We believe." And he says, "I'm going back across. And I'm taking someone with me. Do you believe I can do this?" And the crowd goes, "Yes, we believe." And he goes, "Okay, who's it going to be?" Dead silence. Finally, one guy in the crowd actually said, "I'll go." And it turned out it was his business manager. He saw a good thing going south. So he got up on his shoulders, and the crowd watched as Blondin inched his way back over to the Canadian side of Niagara Falls. 10,000 people said they believed that day. Only one really did. That's the kind of faith that Jesus wants in this church. That's the kind of faith Jesus wants in this church. I was talking with a friend of mine on Friday, and he said, "Well, man, you got a big day on Sunday. You ready to wow 'em?" And I said, "No." And he said, "You're not." And I said, "First of all, I can't wow anyone. Look at me. I can't wow anyone. But the second thing," I said, "why would we want to wow people? Do we want people to be part of this church for the show? Or do we want something different? I want people to be part of this church that aren't here for a show, that aren't here to be wowed, that aren't here for anything else other than to say, I am committed. I have faith the size of a mustard seed, and I want to live powerfully. I want to be part of a church that wants to live powerfully. I want to be a part of a church that doesn't stay up on the mountain, but has mountaintop experiences that prepare them to meet the needs and the struggles and the pain that the world offers us. I want to be part of a church where people say, I'm committing for life. I want to be part of a church where people say, come hell or high water, I'm here. I want people whose faith will still be standing after the day of trial. I'm not interested in people who want a gym where they can come take selfies. I want to be part of a church where people have a thriving, living faith that will withstand whatever this world throws at us. That's the kind of church I want to be a part of, and that's what I'm challenging you guys to be right now. Who here is ready to make that kind of a commitment? Who here is ready to have a faith that will persevere to the end of your life? Who here is ready to make a commitment to a church that won't quit in the tough times? Who here is ready to be standing after the day of trial is gone? Who here is ready to take the gospel to the nations that Jesus has prepared us to do? Who here is ready for that? That's what the challenge is today. That's what this day is all about. It's not wowing people. Simply developing people that will persevere, will have a faith that will withstand the trial of time. We said we make such heroes out of people that die for their faith, don't we? Everybody heard about Columbine High School, Cassie Bernal, down the barrel of a gun. You know, do you believe in Jesus? Yes, I do. Boom. We make such heroes out of them, aren't they? And my friend and I were actually talking. I said, what's easier, to die for Christ or to live for Christ? And honestly, I think it's easier to die for Christ. I think it is. That's a snap decision. You go to heaven. It's great. What I think the real power is that Jesus is talking about here, most of us aren't going to die for our faith. I think the real power is the power to finish strong, to withstand temptation over the course of a lifetime, to day in and day out sacrifice for Jesus, to day in and day out defeat temptation, to day in and day out submit our sinful pride at the foot of the cross and live for Christ, day in, week out, year after year after year. That's the power that Jesus is talking about when he says you will have power to move mountains. Because most of us are good at beginning things. We're not very good at finishing things. So here's the question. Who here is ready to make that kind of a commitment? Who here is ready to do that? If that is what you want to do, we would love for you to be part of this church. If that's not you, we'd love for you to be part of this church. And hopefully you'll change. But let me pray for you guys. And thank you for being here and celebrating this awesome mountaintop experience with us. God gives us this mountaintop because there's a community and a world that needs the gospel. Go into all the world and preach the gospel. Make disciples, baptizing in the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit.